Hi, and welcome to Pause for Fun's first podcast. Today with us, we have Lisa Hamburg of Dog Bless Training. We're very excited that she's here to share her wisdom with us.
And thank you, Judy. I'm delighted to be here, and you have a lot of wisdom of your own. I wanted to talk today on our first podcast together about obedience school, because you and I both teach obedience school. We've been obedient students, and we seem to spend so much time there. I think it's a subject that bears more looking into. What do you think?
I agree. What did you expect your first obedience class when you were a student?
The first time I went to obedience school was with my very first dog, and I wanted to know the code. I wanted to know the words that I should use with the dog that he already, you know, he had the plan book, and I was totally in the dark. So I wanted to know the words and the tone of voice because I was sure that that is what I was doing wrong.
You felt your dog already spoke a language and you
yes.
just needed to learn it.
Yes, and you know, I went to a obedience school where you know, everybody was in a prong collar, and it was lots of rough talking and jerking, and they actually had me stand over my dog. I had a Labrador Retriever. He was very soft, nice dog. And stand over him and clasp my hands under his chest and lift his front legs off the ground, and they had me growl in his ear.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Yes. Can you imagine doing
wow.
such a thing?
Wow.
Poor old Stuart.
Yeah.
He's up in heaven going, I really wish she hadn't done that. She scared the heck out of me.
Yes. My first obedience school, I went with my dog Stitches. She was a little brown mix, and I just wanted her to walk nicely on a leash. We had to use the slip collar, and it was the same thing with the jerking and the tugging and the pulling, and I tried and tried, and I said, well, I'm just not strong enough, or I'm not capable of doing this right, so I gave up.
Yeah, so pretty much you were looking for the secret code also, the right combination of jerking and stern voice and, you know.
Exactly.
It was very, very frustrating.
Yes.
And I really felt like I couldn't get it. And the teacher of this class had little Shelties who were like little robots. Who, you know, she'd open a crate and three or four Shelties would come running out,
mm-hmm.
and they would, you know, heel next to her off leash. Meanwhile, my dog is sniffing and lunging and sunfishing and dragging me everywhere. And I used to come home from obedience school and cry.
Oh.
At night, I would come home and cry because I had the worst dog, and it was just terrible.
Well, my first class, I didn't think I had the worst dog because there was a Siberian Husky there.
Oh.
And he actually pulled his owner to the dirt in Davie Rodeo Arena.
Wow. Did they leave deep trenches?
Yes. And the teacher of the class had a Rottweiler that he would walk in and put in a down stay, and that dog would not move until the end of class. And I thought, that's just amazing.
It's good to see that, you know, like seeing the lady with her little robotic Shelties.
Mm-hmm.
It did give me hope.
Yeah.
But it took me probably 15 years to get there. You know, I really did not get there till that, you know, that dog who I gave up on was dead. And I got a new dog. I got Rocket,
mm-hmm.
who was, you know, the worst Labrador Retriever in the world. And, you know, but I got addicted to obedience school because I met some teachers who made me feel welcome.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I did make progress.
Yeah.
I think a big part of the making of the progress was hot dogs. The discovery of reward-based training changed everything for me.
Yes.
And, you know, hot dog sales are up.
Yes, I agree. I just wasn't interested in the old way of training. It wasn't me. It didn't fit my personality. So that dog just kind of lived in the house, and she was a great dog, and she learned some tricks and some things, but I didn't go back to school until the change had happened, the positive movement had taken over, and it was so exciting to go and find out that we could have fun, that I could actually have fun, and my dog could have fun while we were training. This was a big revelation.
It is. It was such a difference to give up that adversarial way of training. And instead of being my dog's master, I became my dog's partner.
Yes.
And, you know, even though Rocket was the worst dog in the world, he really liked those hot dogs. And I used to delay his dinner until after school. And he paid attention to me.
Yes.
And, you know, the hot dogs were my salvation. And, you know, fast forward to us teaching now. And we had a student recently in class, and he shall remain nameless, who could not wait to get rid of his hot dogs.
Yeah.
You know, every week he would ask, do I still have to bring these? Well, you know, yes. You know, and I, you know, use the analogy with him. Well, before you retired, were you a volunteer only? Or did you have a job for which you were paid?
Yes.
And, you know, of course he had a job and he even has a pension.
Yes.
So, but it never really, with this guy, I was never really able to convince him that, you know, he wasn't bribing the dog. Because, and I had even said to him, do you know any politicians? And he knows someone in local politics. I said, well, go ask them, is the bribe paid before or after? Because a bribe is paid before, but a reward is given after, and that's what we do with reward-based training.
Yes, yes, that's so true. I know I had Dora there with that guy, and he could see Dora and how well-behaved she was, and that I didn't have to give her hot dogs every single time.
Right.
But I do continue to reward her from time to time when she's doing simple things for her, like healing and sitting, because it's still important for her to know that this is fun, and I'm having a good time, and I'm getting something for it. It's not just all work on my part.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have that mental argument with myself that, you know, somebody like the guy with that dog has. You know, I think the occasional reward keeps them in the game.
Yeah, yeah. And when you see the result of it and how you can use rewards to get your dog excited and happy to be participating and wanting to learn more, it's very exciting for me too.
It is. And, you know, just in the same way, you know, we try to positively reinforce the students.
Yes.
I like to catch them doing something right and point that out to them.
Yes.
And, you know, that little bit of emotional stroking makes a big difference. It keeps people coming back to school.
Yes.
When I went to the obedience school where I used to come home and cry, the teacher did not ever tell me that I did something right. Oh, I like the way you rewarded that. Your timing was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I like how you're not putting pressure on the leash.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard any of that, so I never knew if I was doing it right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's so true, and it's true in all of teaching. I'm also a musician, and my first music teacher, was so wonderful because I would play the etude I had prepared and stop and look at him just hoping that I did it right. And he would always find something to compliment, always. And he would say things like, oh, I wish I had a recording of that so I could play that for my other students. And I was shy, so I would kind of glow a little bit. And he'd say, now, if you just did this part a little differently, here, let me show you. I was so receptive to the suggestions he was making because it didn't feel like harsh criticism, but it felt like it's good and now you can make it better.
Right. So you were motivated.
Yes.
And, you know, and he kept you in the game. And I think that's so important.
That's very important for a teacher to do.
Yep. You know, and I wonder sometimes, you know, when people kind of drop out of class, what we should do about it. You know, I mean, because their dogs were making progress, and then all of a sudden, you know, maybe they went a week without practicing, and they were embarrassed to come, and,
yeah.
You know.
Yes.
I mean, I think maybe we should institute a policy of calling people up and, you know, finding something good to say to them to bring them back into the fold.
Yes, yes. But they need to have the right expectations, too.
Oh, expectations, yes.
And people come into class and they don't know what to expect. They think somehow by being there that we're going to train their dogs for them. And when you're in a class, you're not training dogs, you're training people.
Exactly. And you're very right. And a lot of people, when they call me to ask about dog training on the phone, they'll say, how much to train my dog? And I'm like, well, we're going to train you to train your dog.
Yes.
And that's what happens in obedience school.
Yes.
And, you know, we're going to, that should be the expectation, is how much can I learn? Not how much can my dog learn in that little 1 hour window.
Yes.
Once a week. But
if you're going to be a student, you should come in like a sponge and accept everything the teacher has to say and do it. If it doesn't work, you can always discard it later. But why are you there if you're just going to argue with the teacher?
Right. And I get that a lot, too. You know, sometimes people will call me on the phone for advice, and I give my, you know, standard advice, which is tried and true stuff, science-based dog training. And they go, oh, that won't work. I'm like, but you haven't tried it.
Yeah. Well, people don't understand. They think they're doing something, and there's so much to it. Dogs are such readers of our body language that even if we're using the right verbiage, if our body is saying something different, the dog is at best confused and at worst won't do anything that you're verbally asking them to do.
You made that comment one night when we were in class together because I was working with someone else's dog.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the dog was doing a lovely front for me, but not doing a front for his owner. And you like immediately decoded that I was doing something different physically than what the owner was using the words, but they weren't doing the body English to communicate with their dog.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because your whole body language said to the dog, come sit in front of me. This is where my attention is. This is where I want you. And you drew the dog in. And the owner just used the words, but stood like a stick.
Right.
And there was nothing welcoming or encouraging in their body language. And so their dog looked at them confused, like, well, you said the word to come, but you don't look like you want me to come from.
Right. And it's, you know, I feel so bad for the dogs.
Yes.
I feel, you know, I have, yes, I, you know, I know that the people are the ones writing the checks. But I feel so bad for someone who brings their dog and, you know, they have an expectation that if they put in their 6 weeks and they show up, that, you know, at the end of the 6 weeks, there will be this transformation of their dog. And, you know, if they don't practice,
exactly,
it will not happen.
Yes, it so helps. If we should probably ask them if they had ever take music lessons. Because that's such an important part of music lessons. You have to practice, and you practice every day. And in building that muscle memory that comes with practicing every day, it becomes a natural motion to you so that when you're in a pinch, it will come to you instinctively rather than having to search your brain for what should I do now.
You're right. And other lessons, too, like someone who's taken dancing lessons or swimming lessons, we should add that actually to our intake questionnaire and have questions for the owner. Have you ever taken lessons? Because the ability, you know, and are you good at practicing? Are you willing to make the commitment to practice?
Yes.
Because, I mean, that, you know, that 1 hour a week is just not going to do it.
Yeah. I had a student once who was so frustrating because he would come in for his music lesson and I would work with him through the half hour, and at the end of the half hour, he would have his assignment for the coming week. We would have gone over it, and I knew at what level he could perform it now. So I would look forward to next week to hear the improvement, and he would come in the next week and be worse than he was at the end of his lesson last week, and I knew he wasn't practicing.
Wow.
It was very discouraging.
It is. And, you know, I mean, it's one thing if it's, you know, someone who, you know, has bought an instrument or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, has undertaken this. But it's different when it's a pet because sometimes it's life and death for that animal.
Yes, because if they don't learn good house manners, they could wind up going back to the pound and being euthanized.
Right. I mean, the dog who's not a pleasure to walk but has a lot of high energy.
Yes.
you know, I mean, that's, you know, a guy emailed me the other day for dog training, and he said that his one-year-old German Shepherd dog has a lot of energy. That's a euphemism.
Yeah.
And likes to pull on leash.
Oh, wow, what a surprise.
A surprise. And is unruly at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it's a year. What's been going on for, you know, if he got the dog at 2 months old?
Yes.
What's been going on for the past 10 months?
Yes.
You know, and why are you just addressing this now?
Exactly. I've seen dogs come into obedience class 18 months old, large dogs, out of control, and seeing the owner look around and see some smaller dogs that have had puppy kindergarten and some other things, and they're doing so well, and actually heard them say out loud, gee, do you think I should have started training sooner?
What a revelation.
Yes.
No. No, wait, I'll get my magic wand.
Yes, yes.
I used to have a plastic magic wand that made like that sound.
Yes.
And, you know, I used to bring it to private house calls and ask people if they wanted me to go out to the car and get the magic wand. It would be an extra $1,000.
Yeah.
And I'll wave the magic wand and, you know, it'll all be fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, but they wish I had it.
Oh, I'm sure they do. It's hard work. You know, it is work. If you want to improve your dog's behavior, you have to dedicate yourself to the work that it takes, and it's not going to happen overnight.
No, but I think that at the end of 6 weeks, if someone is diligent, they can expect to have walking with some attention when they ask for it.
Yes.
I think that in 6 weeks you could end, you know, the walking and having your arm jerked out of its socket.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I think a lot of the control issues are fixable. You know, the life and death things that send a dog to the pound because they're so unpleasant to live with are fixable in the 6 weeks to the point where probably you or I would not be satisfied with that level of obedience or behavior, but most people would be okay with it.
Yes.
If they just applied themselves.
Yes, yes. The recall, you can have a decent recall in 6 weeks to where if you call your dog in a happy tone of voice and excitedly, the dog will turn around from most things and come
right
back to you. And I saw that with my own dog in my first 6 weeks with Dora. I worked on her recall and tried to use the happy voice that the trainer used.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. And she really enjoyed coming back to me. She would wag her tail all the way as she's running to me. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. And then one day I opened the front door and she saw something out in the yard and went dashing out the door toward the road. There was a car coming.
Oh, my God.
My heart stopped and I thought, the recall. So I worked up my happy voice and my calm, oh, Dora, come. And she turned around and came to me. And that was proof positive to me.
Right. It made you a believer.
Yes.
An instant believer in the work. And, you know, I mean, the sky is the limit. If you really get into communicating and training your dog, you know, your dog could learn to, you know, pick up a dropped pen for you, bring the remote control, find your phone.
Yes, turn the lights on and off.
Right. I mean, so many things, you know, or to get off the sofa when you ask.
Yes.
The sky's the limit, and it's so customizable. And, you know, once people learn the method of reward-based training, it's such a nice thing.
Yes.
I wish we could get more people into it.
You don't have to live in a household with yelling and
right,
and anxiety because your dog is misbehaving constantly. It can be fun to train them to behave.
Yes. I agree. And, you know, to have a dog who you can, you know, take to a hotel and you know that they're not going to, you know, do anything terrible.
Yes.
It's you know, because I travel with the dogs a lot, and it's really nice.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how many hours I put into Rocket's training, because he was the first dog I trained with positive methods.
Yes.
And he was my laboratory, and he was a you know, a wild beast.
Yes, he was a good challenge.
He was. I mean, that was like trial by fire with that dog. And, you know, I probably put, I don't know, 1,000 hours in the first year.
Yeah.
And, you know, it I now have that dog who, when I'm teaching obedience school, I can put down in the middle of the room and walk away and know that he's going to stay put, like Dora.
Yes.
And it's, you know, I'm that person now.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is. It's a lot of fun, and I, you know, it was hard to get there, but it was very, very worthwhile. And, you know, I think that it is motivating for the students, too, to see that it's possible. But maybe it may be demotivating for the people who are looking for the magic wand.
Yes, and I see people looking at Dora, and Dora is so good. And they think that, oh, well, she was just that personality, or that was easy. And they don't see the hours and hours and hours that went into her training.
Right.
She was a good dog when I got her. She really wasn't, you know, very badly behaved, except she was a terrible counter surfer. You couldn't leave any food on the counter.
But Dora loves food more than anything.
Yes, she does. But to get her where she is today was, like you say, thousands of hours of training. The night that she got out, the gate was left open, and I went outside and couldn't see her anywhere and called her name and had no response, and I was panicking, and I thought, okay, I haven't told her what to do. I've called her name, but I haven't told her what to do. So I called, Dora, come, and she came running like a rocket from around the block up to me. That was worth every hour that I spent into that recall. But that didn't happen overnight. Those
right.
things don't happen overnight. And I see in class people who see Dora and they want their dog to be like her, and they're making tremendous progress, but they're dissatisfied because they want the finished product.
Right.
And Dora's 10.
Right, and you're still working on Dora.
Yes, I am.
Which is, you know, to your credit, that you're not resting on your laurels, and that, you know, Dora at age 10 is still learning new things.
She loves to learn new things.
Yeah. So I think that we may be closing in on a podcast.
Okay.
So I think we'll, you know, we'll continue recording after this, and
okay.
we'll pick another topic and talk about something else interesting. So thank you to Judy for inviting me to the Pause for Fun inaugural podcast.
And thank you to Lisa for being here. I really appreciate her wisdom and all the knowledge she brings.
And the best friends you make are your dog friends.
Woof, woof.